Yeah, well, for the Viola Lick series, I needed some help with the funding. I am financing it a lot on my own, but aside from getting a bit of financial support from my community, I also wanted to get some engagement.
Mm-hmm.
So I created the campaign with some perks. The biggest one was the choose your own theme. And I thought, you know, I could just choose my own themes forever, because there's so much film music that I love. But so let's hear what some other people want. And
right.
So I got some interesting requests. I think I got about a dozen themes picked. And like I said, it was some very surprising ones. Some very, very cool and fun to play. I've recorded about half of them.
Uh-huh. Do we get to know some, or we have to wait till next year?
No, it's okay.
Okay.
Give us
a little tidbit of what people chose for a theme to play on your viola.
Well, I suppose my fan base tends to be of a slightly older generation, so mm-hmm. I got requests like theme tune for Fish Called Wanda.
Oh, okay.
And another one was Faulty Towers.
Faulty Towers.
John Cleese. And what else did I get? I got Sound of Music.
Yes. That's a gooder, yeah.
I got Blood Diamond and Schindler's List.
Oh, yes.
What else?
Yeah, all great movies.
Yeah, and I got some original requests, too. I think I got a... Oh yes, I got one. When heaven calls or something.
Mm-hmm.
From Prince of Egypt, that Disney film.
Yes. So if you want to request a theme, you can do that on Indiegogo.com and mm-hmm. then search for hashtag Viola Licks. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. So yes, and it's the campaign is still live. So if you wanted to place a theme, you could do that. The other thing you can do is you can order a digital copy, or rather, sorry, a physical copy of all 52 themes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be assembling a CD, and I've sold about 17. So that's another will be cool thing to have.
I noticed at the very end here, there's a private recital. If you wanted to request Thomas to come to your house or an event.
I had a couple of those ordered, yep.
Oh, that's amazing. And you usually play like in churches and that sort of thing, right? Like I'm guessing the acoustics must be mm-hmm. amazing.
Yeah, with Arbutus Duo, we normally give recitals in churches because, as you point out, the acoustics are amazing. And we also have some friends who are associated with churches, so there's a nice community for us to tuck into there. And then aside from that, that really is it. I mean, with my other groups, we're just playing corporate gigs. So.
Yep.
But.
Okay, and we're going to play some more songs from Thomas Beckman after the break.
Wandering Rhythms, Mondays from noon to 2.
Join us in a weekly sample of music from planet Earth.
The strangest mixtape you will ever hear.
Desert blues.
Balkan punk.
Latin funk.
African psych.
Pigeon rap.
And anything and everything else you can imagine, equally represented by all continents.
Because good music is universal.
Wandering Rhythms.
Mondays at noon on CJSF 90.1 FM.
This is Bird Note. American crows stream by overhead in the late afternoon. Rivers of crows. These are crows on a mission. They're headed to their night roost, a giant avian slumber party. Gathering in a park or woodland, they land in a tree, then scuffle and shuffle and squawk, filtering down through the branches. Birds arriving late force the early birds lower into the trees. Crow experts think the roost may provide benefits like warmth, protection from predators, shared information about food sources, and a chance to find a mate. Immature crows may spend the night in the roost year-round, but adults of breeding age stay in their own nests while raising their young, then go back to the group after the fledglings leave. So, just how many crows are there in a roost? That varies, but at one longtime roost in Danville, Illinois, locals have counted more than 100,000 crows. Not that the folks of Danville are especially happy about that. Imagine the ruckus when the first few thousand crows leave in the morning, about an hour before sunrise. Follow crows to their roost some autumn evening if you can, and watch these avian acrobats wheel in for the night. But if you go, just a word of warning, you might want to take an umbrella. For Bird Note, I'm Ashley Ahurton. Find out what's new with Bird Note. Subscribe to our weekly email at birdnote.org.
All right, we're back, and we're going to talk about the viola, because usually it's most commonly it's violin players, right? And not too many people play the viola, so this is great that you're getting the viola more popular.
Yeah, I think a big part of the series is really showcasing the viola. If you go online and you type in just about any film theme covered by violin or cello, that's what you find. You find a massive number of violin and cello covers, but very little of viola. So I really feel like the series is, in its own way, addressing a bit of a lack of viola recordings out on the web. So, yeah, and it's the viola, I think, has a very diverse, unique range and sound that is entirely conducive to exploring all of these adventurous themes. And I love tucking into the low C and getting that dark, rich sound, but then also showing that viola can be very high. You can go right up on that A string, and you can be just as brilliant and high-pitched as a violin. So it's a very... And just also because by virtue of where the instrument sits, timbrally, it's the closest to the human voice. Mm. So it's got this beautiful, rich mid-range. And I think that's... the series is really showcasing all of these themes and tunes that we all know and love, but using the wonderful voice of the viola.
Yes, and the size of the viola, is it actually smaller than the violin?
So it's a bit bigger.
It's a bit bigger?
It's a bit bigger, yes.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
And that's what partly allows it to have a deeper, lower tone.
Mm.
Yeah, so if you look at the cello and then you look at the double bass, so, you know, the lower you get, the bigger you get in body size.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, and we're going to talk about your collaborations here.
Okay.
So yes, tell me about this next video we're going to play. It's the Christina Perry, A Thousand Years and More. You have like a combo of a few different mm-hmm. songs. We're going to find out what they are. But
yeah.
You're playing with... a harpist.
Josephine Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been very lucky that within the last 5 years or so, I've met some really wonderful musicians who've been open to collaborating. And one of them has been Josephine Lee, aside from Kitty Lamb, who's my pianist with Arbutus Duo. So Josephine Lee plays the classical harp. It's quite an extraordinary instrument. It's very big. And it's just, she's a really wonderful player. Plays everything by ear, although she can read. And we play once a week at the Weston Bayshore Hotel in Cole Harbour. And we've also done a whole bunch of gigs. And it's just a real pleasure to play with her. And we like to play pop music and classical music. And we don't use any sheet music. It's just all by ear. And it's a very free, fun spirit, too. So, you know, there's lots of liberty that we exercise within the structure of a lot of these pop tunes. I often just meander off and play improvs, and she's completely comfortable with that. So it's been a very productive and fun collaboration. And the thing that you're about to play is a medley that we recorded last year that has got A Thousand Years by Christina Perry, Can't Take My Eyes Off You by Frankie Valli, Senorita, and I think one other, which name I'm forgetting now. But we just sort of like to go after the tunes that people love to hear for their weddings and other events. And they're a lot of fun to play. And every time we play them, people light up. They recognize them. If we were to play some obscure classical piece, we probably wouldn't get the same reaction. So, yeah.
Thank you.
beautiful, super beautiful. I love that. I love the sound, and it's amazing. Okay, so we're going to talk about where people can find you on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you just type in my name, Thomas Beckman, you'll find my YouTube channel there, and I'm trying to build it up to a decent number of subscribers so that when the series drops next year, people are plugged in and they'll be receiving the videos as they release.
Yes, amazing.
So
yes, and you got some Instagram as well and Facebook where people can find you.
Yep, and by the same name. And on Instagram, I believe it's Thomas_violist, and you'll find me there. So
excellent.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to talk about scary stories. Ooh, because
it's
a Halloween
That's right.
episode.
I love Halloween.
Yes. So tell me about. I don't know. Is this a prank that you did on your mom? Or yes, tell me about this.
Well, basically, when I was growing up, we lived in this big house in Hout Bay, and from the garage to the TV room was the living room. And the living room was basically this long, it wasn't a skinny room, but it was a long sort of corridor that was had glass on the one side, and then it opened up into a sitting area. But you had to walk down this rather long passage, and then it connected to the kitchen. And there was a door right where it met the kitchen at the end of this long corridor. And so my mom would go off and play netball, and she'd come home quite late at night sometimes. So I got this crazy idea for a prank into my head to put on a black robe, and we had the famous scream mask.
Yes, yes.
So I put on the scream mask and I took out the butcher knife, turned all the lights off, and when my mom arrived and I heard her walking up from the garage to start her long walk down the corridor where she would see me at the other end of it, I had all the lights turned off and I had my blade glinting in the moonlight. And I just stood there like this, you know, like with the knife in the air and my mask on and shrouded in this big black cloak. And she just went sort of shaky in the knees. And she just immediately said, "Oh, Thomas?" And she was really scared. And I just immediately felt terrible. So I thought, oh, my goodness, am I going to give my mom a heart attack? So I ripped my mask off. I was like, "Mom, it's me. Don't worry." But, yeah.
Okay, that was great. And I'm glad you went easy on her, because you could have came towards her.
I know.
Yeah.
For a second there, I think she something was seriously wrong.
Yes. And we're going to talk about Halloween candy, because you're going to give out candy this year. What is your favorite Halloween candy?
Well, I just moved to a new place, and I'm on the ground floor, and I've always wanted to have a big bucket of candy for the trick-or-treaters.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, I don't have a favorite candy per se, but you know how the shops here, they just go nuts with all the candies. There's just piles and piles of boxes of chocolates and candies everywhere. So I could very easily fall into that and just get one of those. Or I might try and be a bit more creative and get an assortment of more interesting candies. But it's more just about seeing the costumes. And
yes.
I'm probably, if I'm going to hand out candy, I'm going to be dressed up as something scary.
Yes, let's talk about your costume.
My goodness.
What are you thinking of dressing up this year?
You know, I have no idea, but I think Dracula would be pretty cool. If I could find that classic cape and paint my face pale, get some fangs, I think that would be neat.
Yeah, that would be great. And then I have a joke for you. What does vampires or Draculas, what's their favorite fruit?
Gosh, no idea.
Nectarines.
Ba-dum-bump. Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about Tubular Bells. This is your next demo clip that we're going to be playing here.
Yeah.
So, yes, tell me about...
Tubular Bells is a very popular track off an album by Oldfield. What's his name? Oldfield. It's by Mike Oldfield, released in 1973, which was the same year that the film The Exorcist came out.
Oh.
And so whoever directed the film decided that the track should be used.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't one of those cases where it was written for the film. It was taken out of the album and repurposed for the film. But I actually have another scary story.
Yes.
It's a funny story. I wasn't born yet, but my parents were living in Vancouver when they had me and my sister, they had us here in Vancouver. And then when we were 6 and 5, we moved to Cape Town. But before that happened, my parents were, they had this friend of theirs who had this uncanny ability to scream to the point where he'd make himself hoarse for the next couple of days. So okay. He could only do it once.
Right.
And so apparently the exorcist at the time was showing, and their apartment was overlooking a parking lot that fed into the local cinema house.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those really late shows, and they'd been up drinking and talking, probably 2 or 3 in the morning. And they'd had just had the last viewing of The Exorcist, and one lonely couple came into the parking lot after the film finished. And my dad's friend recognized the opportunity and just released the most bloodthirsty scream you could ever imagine. And apparently the couple froze and then suddenly just ran into the car and just screamed out of there. So, and he was hoarse for the next couple of days.
All right. Here's Tubular Bells. Love it. Love it, love it, love it. Okay, and yes, we're going to talk about TV shows now. Yeah, and there's so many TV shows that are filmed here in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
Have you met anyone famous, like any actors?
Actually, when Sons of Granville, back in, I think it was 2013,
mm-hmm.
we were busking on Georgia and Granville Street late at night, and suddenly I looked up, and Sam Neill was standing a few meters away in a really nice trench coat, and he was watching us. And of course, I'd watched Sam Neill as Dr. Grant from Jurassic Park, and he also played a big cameo role in Hunt for Red October. So I instantly recognized him, and I walked right up to him, and I was like, "Sam Neill," and he was like, "Well, don't let me stop you. You guys sound great," and that was just, it meant the world to me to receive a compliment from him. And it was funny because a few minutes later, he's carried off on his way. And I went up to Matthew, who's still a guitarist at the time. I said, "Sam Neill was watching us, and he just gave us a compliment." And he was like, "Well, who's Sam Neill?"
Right.
I was like, "Dr. Grant from Jurassic Park." And he's like, "No way." And he dropped his guitar, and he ran across the street, and he found Sam Neill. He's like, "Sam Neill, I just wanted to say I'm a big fan." And apparently Sam Neill said, Matt said, "I love Jurassic Park." And apparently Sam was just like, "It was a terrible movie." And then just turned his back and carried on walking down the street. Okay. I was like, "What?"
I thought the first one was great. I don't know. It's always the first one that's kind of like, you know, like, oh yeah.
The first one was great,
right?
Because it had a story. It
exactly.
had a message. It wasn't just about making cool dinosaurs.
Yeah, and I like the. Right, and then the water. I was like, "Oh, what's happening?"
Apparently, they had a speaker situated below the cup with the water, and that's how they got the water to vibrate.
Oh,
because they would just give like a shot of like a big bass note or something,
right.
And that would actually
that's
jar.
How, oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, because I was trying to replicate that over here, and then I was just kind of like doing, just banging on the table. I want that, ripple effect.
Yeah.
No, that's cool. Okay, and we're gonna talk about X-Files.
Mm.
So, did you used to watch that TV show back in the day?
Yes, I grew up watching X-Files in Cape Town.
Really?
And then subsequently came to Vancouver in 2008
mm-hmm.
and discovered not too long after that actually most of the show had been shot here. So, and I recently downloaded the first season because although it's aged pretty poorly and it's a very corny show, it's so nostalgic for me,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I love the music by Mark Snow, and it's such a great iconic TV theme. And Dana Scully is such a cool character. I've always just loved The X-Files, and it's funny watching it because you can see parts of Gastown, you can see the old 90s rectangular cars, you know, and it's just got that overcast, gloomy Vancouver feel to it.
Yeah, I love it. And before we head out, folks, I want to talk about your videographer.
Mm.
Yes, tell me who helped you out making these videos.
So I'm very lucky to have met Darko Sickman. He's an incredibly generous and skillful videographer and photographer. And he's virtually done all of the videos that you'll find on my channel. And he was very graciously agreed to sort of help me with this whole Violalix thing, because it's a lot of video work. It's 52 mm-hmm. themes that have to be turned into music videos. So he's come with me to White Cliff Park and Lighthouse Park, and he's going to be shooting with me in the Star Theater at the H.R. Macmillan Center, but he's also going to be shooting with me on the St. Rock ship in the Vancouver Maritime Museum, as well as we've done a lot of work in the Beaumont Studio, and then we're also going to be shooting in the Canadian Music Center, the Murray Adaskin Salon. So he's just coming with me everywhere, and I'm not paying him nearly as much as I should be. But I feel like he kind of he sort of trusts that this whole journey that I'm on is going to keep growing and growing, is going to lead to more and more opportunities. But he's just great to work with. He's a super intelligent guy, very gregarious, and he's just got a real eye for perfection, and he does things very quickly and efficiently. So yeah, he's been a real boon to my career.
Amazing. And earlier I asked if you believed in aliens. Now let's talk about ghosts. Do you believe in ghosts?
No, I do not believe in ghosts.
Oh no, because our next guest on Thursday night, we have paranormal investigators as my guest.
Oh, I'm going to have to listen to that one.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll change my mind.
You got to stay
tuned
for that.
But how am I going to sleep at night if I now believe in ghosts? I did. Actually, I had a very awful experience once. I watched the Paranormal Activity
mm-hmm.
movies?
Yes.
Well, I mean, the first time you watch that, it's terrifying. And I remember, you know how, like, the first one was shot where, from the perspective of the guy who's sleeping in his bed and his door is always, like, half open to
right,
his bedroom?
Right.
And then what would happen is, like, halfway through the night, the door would just mysteriously open and close.
Right, it's scary.
So I remember lying in my bedroom many years ago and seeing the door slightly open, and just, like, it freaked me out to the point where I think my body even simulated the feeling of something tugging my leg halfway through the night.
Oh,
I mean, I
gosh.
Literally felt like my body had been pulled slightly off the bed. And I just attributed it to classic human neuroses, and, you know, we manifest our worst nightmares all the time.
Oh, yeah, it's freaky. So we'll find out, Thursday night, folks, what's real, what's not, right? Mm-hmm. That sort of thing. Anyways, if you want to follow Thomas Beckman, subscribe to his YouTube channel. Yes, so it's Thomas Beckman, BECKMAN.
That's right.
That's right. Okay, and we're going to listen to X-Files. Well, thank you so much, Thomas, for coming on the Wham Bam East Van Show. Wham Bam.
East Van.
Yeah, baby. Catch y'all Thursday night, y'all.
This is Bird Note. As he trained to be an arborist, Thomas Pulsum started developing two new interests. The first was birds.
My favorite bird is a robin redbreast in Europe. Because when you're digging, a little robin is always following you around looking for food, worms and grubs and all sorts of things that you're digging up.
The other was building with Lego bricks. After a dark age away from the toy while at university. And then Thomas found these interests colliding.
I wanted to build something related to my work, and I had a eureka moment, which was a robin landing on my fork handle. So I thought, right, I'm going to build a robin out of Lego.
After building that European robin, he built more bird models and a name for himself in the Lego community. To date, he's made more than 75 species. And in 2015, Thomas was one of the first Lego fans to have his designs produced as an official set. It included a blue jay, a hummingbird, and, of course, a robin.
I was really chuffed, and I was invited to a Lego store in London, and people were queuing up to get me to sign the box and everything. It was very surreal and an extremely proud moment of my life.
To see pictures of Thomas's delightful bird models, go to our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mark Bramhill.